we go. This is October the 3rd, 2020. I am Charles Stewart, and we are hosting a conference for the Supreme Court of Law for the United States of America. And we were just starting off with a small group here, we were talking a little bit with our friend Dallas from British Columbia, Canada, that's also been working with us. We're shifting gears over from that. Dallas will get into the developments there in Canada in a few moments here, but I'd like to kind of at least pay lip service to our ambitious agenda here, as Lewis likes to call it, and go ahead and at least bang our first formality out of the way with a formal prayer, if there's no objections. Supreme Judge of Truth and Justice in the Universe, Yahweh Jehovah, please help us to follow the pathway of your precious Son, Jesus Yeshua, to promote the cause of truth and justice on this earth under your kingdom with righteous rulers, as the Bible talks about. Please help us to be humble and receptive and seeking peace on so many controversial and inflammatory issues in front of us. Help us to be humble and seeking peace so that we may be true and honest rather than serving our own agendas. And in the name of your precious Son, Jesus Yeshua, we humbly pray these things. Amen. And I'd like to go through the formalities of jumping to Agenda 2, and then we'll fast track displace Agenda Item 3 to talk a little bit about Canada, if that's good with you there, Dallas.
Sure.
All right, thank you. Agenda Item 2 is asking qualified electors of everybody here is presumed to be a qualified elector, even if you haven't filled out the paperwork or anything. I really have had inspiration that making a record, that we're on a court record here, the conference is being recorded, and even if we don't have documents filled out, Agenda Item 2 is suggesting that we at least review an overview of who are the major players in our forums. Like Dallas is talking about people that are subverting us with distractions and stuff. This is exactly what we need, but we need to produce work product about who is behaving honorably as a qualified elector and who we are saying this person is dishonorable, too dishonorable to be a qualified elector. And we need to make public records about that, at least verbally, so that other people can come in and reference these things and have some type, especially new people, they can have a backdrop of who is trustworthy and who isn't trustworthy, because there's so much confusion. We are swamped in confusion in this information age. We've got immense valuable data, but it's being swamped in all of the garbage data that surrounds us all. So I'd like to ask each of the, let's see, how many do we have here? There's only 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of us. I'd like to start out by saying I've got serious problems. I reject the proposition that John Daresch is a qualified elector of National Liberty Alliance, and I reject the proposition that Anna von Ritz is a qualified elector, and I reject the proposition that Keith Livingway is a qualified elector, and both Joseph Biden and Donald Trump, I reject the proposition that they are qualified electors, and I affirm most everybody that's ever been on this phone conference here, and I'd like to invite others here to do the same. Michael, Lewis, Dallas, Nikki, there's only four others besides me here. Would you like to quickly affirm or deny any specific people that are problematic or particularly praiseworthy here? Any of you? I yield.
I would.
I can't hear the person speaking. Hello?
Yeah, Nikki. Nikki, did your phone break up? I can't hear you, Nikki.
Sound like she dropped off.
Yeah, she dropped right off.
Yeah.
So, Charles, so like you mentioned Trump and the other gentleman there. You're denouncing them like they're fraud?
Yeah, they're not.
Okay, yeah,
they're not.
Anna Von Reese is a fraud. You know that, right?
Right. That's why I put her on
fraud,
my...
100% fraud. She's a distraction. Based out of Alaska. I studied her stuff for 6 years. All she does is put you into a circle jerk. That's what we call it up here in the Corporation of Canada. You get 90%, and then all of a sudden there's nothing there. Her layout is so convoluted, impossible to understand. It's like... you don't have to ask your master for your freedom. We never give up our freedom. We're always been sovereign. They use an illusion, a distraction to harm us. The republics and the states got to go full force. The United States is a corporation. We all know that, controlled by the Vatican. But how do we fix the problem? The problem is we got to get the republics understanding what a true constitution is going to bring each of the republics. The people need to rise up with a solution. Right now they're bombarded with all these distractions. The problem, the system in every republic is controlled by usury. In order for us to win this war against this satanic cult, is what I call them, we need to get the people, the 15%, 12%, 20%, or whatever we can gather, to come together in each of the republics very quickly and find out which republics are moving forward in a direction of a positive. We cannot save all the republics, but I'll tell you, if we get 5, 6, 7 republics to rise up together, no different than we can save any of the territorial provinces or territories in the corporation of de facto unlawful thing called Canada. We're not going to win. We're looking at strategy up here. The strategy is this: we'll get Alberta, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, most of BC, and parts of Ontario. Possibly Nova Scotia, possibly New Brunswick. We don't know yet. We're seeing the numbers coming in now. We're doing numbers. Mathematics is what we're looking at. Where our strong points are, or where our weak points are. With this mass invasion of migrants flooding our nation, yes, many of them are beautiful people. Many are here because of the endless wars for 30 years at the military complex of Canada, Great Britain, Australia, New Zealand, etc. Mostly Great Britain and Canada and the U.S., the military complex. Those three there have been detrimental in the destruction of so many nations in the last 15, 20 years. Libya, Somalia, Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, etc. It's countless what they've done. So we have a massive amounts of migrants looking for a new place to go. Many of them are great people, but the influx is so drastic, we can't sustain the mass amounts of migrants coming in. We just don't have the economic. We don't have the jobs economically to take that amount of a massive rush of people. So we've increased our population. I mean, it's millions. I mean, we're looking at 6-7 million that came in the last 4 years. It's huge. You got to remember, our population base is very small, and it's now starting to affect us very much so. Plus, they have, you know, lots of them are very, very ill-trained in trades, education. We're spending most of our time educating them to learn how to speak English. It'll take 3 to 5 years. Yes, their children will adopt into the school systems, or the indoctrination systems, but right now, we're being bombarded, and it's very, very dangerous what's going on up here. We are creating a multicultural system where we have different ethnic ideologies: Muslims, Hindu, India, Sikh, traditionally these were, you know, very sporadic, but now we have large segments of the population being divided. So even when you go to Vancouver, they call it Hong Kong now. Honkuber. When we go to Calgary, we have parts of our cities in Edmonton now that consider them as, you know, this is the Lebanese area, this is the Hindu area, this is the Sikh area, this is the Muslim area. We've never had this type of diversion or distraction, or they're separating us by races, where we didn't have that. This is very, very well stealthy, played out by the Albert Pike planned World War III for us, right? I would imagine the U.S. has had this for quite a few years, but we're in for a shit show, and we're being hijacked by all these dissent groups that aren't given solution. They say they're leaderless, but they're definitely not leaderless. We're watching them. A lot of our main members are contacting, the Line's actually been contacting us out of Ontario, trying to figure out why the Line's not working with the solution to keep going. They keep saying the same thing. We're here to take the masks off. We're here to say the COVID's a fraud. So what? That's not a solution. That's just a distraction.
Yeah,
they don't
yeah.
put up any solutions. They don't talk about solutions. They don't talk about the Constitution that we don't have. Then we got this same guy named Rocca Galati, who says he's a constitutional lawyer, who's a fraud. I called him right out.
Dallas.
You have the same. We're seeing the same mechanism in the what's happening in down in the republics, of the disinformation, the distractions of all these different problems. I mean, we never heard of Black Lives Matter until just recently into the Corporation of Canada, and now it's starting up here. Seriously, it's unbelievable.
Dallas.
So we know that, huh?
I respond to a few of the points that you've already raised. I like to keep the conference flowing back and forth with lots of involvement rather than just one person grabbing the microphone and
yep.
talking for 15 minutes or something. For the record, I think you affirmed your declaration, your point of light, that Anna von Ritz, in your honest assessment, is not a qualified elector. For the record, is that true?
100%.
Okay, very good. I'd just like to make the record like that. And I think you mentioned at least one or maybe a couple people in Canada that you're affirming are not qualified electors. Would you like to name them specifically for the record here?
Well, we don't really. I mean, you have these, the lawyers, Rocca Galati. He pretends he's a constitutional lawyer. Canada has no constitution. So he's already, right from the beginning, he's fraud. That's just one. But we have numerous other groups. We're looking at, I mean, we look at Wexit. Okay, Wexit came out of nowhere. We know now that it's funded by George Soros, or SNC-Lavalin, through the Trudeau Foundation to the Hillary Clinton Foundation, 100%. So they came out of nowhere after the Brexit breakup of Europe. Wexit came in. They're going to create a political party, a federal party, and a provincial party. But at the beginning, they weren't doing that. They were going for separation. They well know there's no federation papers, and et cetera, et cetera. Peter Downing was heading that. So Peter Downing is either A, part of the problem, or uneducated. And I've spoken to him numerous times. Downing knows there's no constitution, no federation papers. He has said numerous times that he's going to announce that the people of Alberta need to get a constitution, that Canada doesn't exist. It's de facto, illegal, and unlawful. He didn't do that. So here we are with Wexit coming up again. We're being hit by numerous different controlled oppositions. Most of them are ex-members of parliament or MLAs that have already belonged to the Bilderberg Group, have known ties to the Bilderberg Group. They are controlling controlling the news, the media, and even the protests they're controlling. And that's a big issue. I would imagine you guys are having the same problem down in the republics too, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, right on.
Yeah.
Daniel,
good to have you with us. Can you refresh our memory? What state are you in, Daniel?
Michigan.
All right. Very good.
If I might, Charles.
Lewis, yes.
Okay, you gave five names. Were they not? Anna von Reich wasn't the only one. I was trying to keep the names in my head. because I think I was in agreement with the five names in terms of them not being having qualified elector status and not being qualified in order to do so. So I was trying to keep those five names. That was Anna was one, John Duresh, correct, was another, Keith.
Living Way.
Right, and I am familiar with that organization as well and that conversation. The other two was that Donald Trump and Joe Biden?
Yes, that's it.
In complete agreement.
100%. Trump's part of the globalists, 100%.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He's just playing the right, you know, using all the conspiracy facts, but he's done nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing for the United States. He has executive orders. If he wants to affirm the Constitution of the United States, the Republic Constitution of the United States, and affirm that, he has executive orders. If any governor never, ever, if they go against the Constitution, the executive orders will give the President of the United States to remove a governor that's not following the original Constitution. But, again, he's not doing anything. He's playing it. Oh, I can't do that because I can't interfere with the republics. The republics are independent nations, and they have to do it themselves. He's using it as a crutch, which we all know is not a crutch. Every single democratic state, you look at them anyways, even the republic states, but the democratic states are in turmoil. I mean, we're getting some of the news through our patriots up here, you know, the fires, the burning in the streets, et cetera, the looting, the insanity. This is not normal for the republics to have this type of insanity. They mean, yes, it's been going on for years, but for us up here in the Corporation of Canada, we've never seen anything like that. So this is very new to us. So we're learning from what's happening down in the republics, and now that same madness is spilling over into the Corporation of Canada, which very, very, it's concerning us, but very much so. So we're trying to learn from your mistakes how we can stop this idiocy to take hold of up here. And that's why we're going to go after these targeted groups like the Line, George Soros, what do you want to call them? Somebody's paying for it. It's impossible to have this much disruption and so much incompetence without somebody funding it. And why aren't the police officers arresting these people? Seriously. Our police officers used to be respected. They were, you know, the family guy in the town. Everybody knew them. Now we have a totally different police force. We don't even know where these police officers came from. It's totally incompetence what's going on up here. Your police officers used to get hired locally. The family knew them, the town knew them, and they were respected. Our sheriffs were the same way. We have sheriffs here. I mean, they don't even speak our language. Seriously. So it's very concerning. Plus, we got 30,000 Chinese soldiers in northern British Columbia. We also have Chinese soldiers now that have landed in British Columbia on the coast. This is very concerning. And I, you know, it's got quite a few of us like, what the hell is going on here? Why are Chinese soldiers landing on our shores, and why are they on our grounds? We've never had this before. And our illegal thing called de facto Canada, Trudeau, the parasite, whatever you call him, has allowed this to happen. And then we're going, well, why isn't the U.S., our strongest ally to the South, not sending F-18s in to figure out what the hell's going on? You follow me?
Yeah, Dallas, can we share the microphone a little bit? Yep. Michael, did you have something?
Yeah, thank you very much. Do you have any proof of this, about these Chinese soldiers, 30,000?
Oh, yeah, it's all over our news. They're right in Vancouver. Not shit.
Can you share a web link, Dallas?
I don't have it with me right now, no. I can get one for you guys. I'll put it out on email to you. Oh, yeah, they're here. We got drones going in this week here. We get people taking pictures.
Okay.
It's very, very concerning, seriously. I mean, it's
what's the excuse they give? If I may, please. What's the excuse the government gives that they're there for? What's the information?
Training exercises and bullshit. When have we ever dealt with China? So, very concerning. Also, this is confirmed from our friends in the military, the Canadian Forces, on the Navy end. They've renamed all of our ships. They used to say Royal Canadian Navy to Border Patrol. Oh, yeah. Also, we've removed our Canadian flags off of our Parliament building and put a United Nations flag up. I'm not kidding you. They did, even in B.C. So they've captured the nation by the flag. The Canadian flag captures it. The British flag captures it. Now we've got the United Nations flag hanging in our Parliament buildings. This is very concerning to us.
Yeah.
It's a nightmare.
Right, right. If I might, kind of related to that, there's a woman named Nancy Morgenhart that works closely with Roy Potter. And Roy Potter directed me to Nancy's video where Nancy was saying that Trump has entered into an agreement here with Mexico recently, and there's 15,000 soldiers on the southern border right next to the border between Mexico and the USA on the Mexican side, and they're basically a bunch of narco gang mercenaries that are wearing Mexican military uniforms, and 15,000 of them. And when you started saying big numbers of Chinese up there in BC, it's looking like I was troubled just by the news from Nancy Morgenhart that Headlines with the Voice is her YouTube channel, and she was saying that in about a 5-minute video there. And I was troubled by that because they're usually pretty reputable people. And now what you're saying, Dallas, I wasn't aware of the Chinese troops up there in B.C., and that looks like serious military buildups on both sides of the border of the USA here. And that is sounding like real ominous developments to me. I yield.
We had shipments. This is another one, too. There was we had some big bases in northern Ontario. And the last 2 weeks, they've been shipping trainfuls of Hummers, these, all types of military equipment all the way from Ontario to B.C. So they've been spotted on trains for miles heading through the provinces of Saskatchewan. And people took pictures and videos of them. The information coming from the government is that they're all being shipped to Vancouver to put on the ships and shipped to Great Britain. Well, that's total BS. It's nonsense. Why would you ship from Ontario to the province of British Columbia, which is 4,000 or 5,000 miles in the opposite direction, and then they're going to ship them to supposedly to Great Britain, when they could have went right from Ontario with Hercules and flew them from Ontario straight to Great Britain or Spain or France, et cetera, or they could have brought them right down to St. Lawrence and into St. Lawrence and straight out to the ocean and put them on ships there. They're nonsense of selling them, so this is a very red flag for a lot of us. Very confusing. I'm trying to find some information for you on that one. But it's been mind-boggling. Each time we put up information, I'm hoping they're going to have most of the stuff put onto Brighteon or BitChute ASAP so we can get some more information. Okay, I yield the floor. Sorry about that.
Yeah, we're good. Others?
If I may, Michael, in Florida, I would like any links for evidence to the 30,000 troops. And, you know, everything you've mentioned is a symptom of the tyranny. And I'd really like to get focused on solutions and marketing, attempting to, you know, get people involved. The strategy to reach out to the ignorant masses. This is our enigma. This is what we need to be busy about. I yield.
Thank you, Michael. Others? Let me continue on with some of the agenda items here, please. We do have one way of gathering recruits, I think, is to address the fraudulent coronavirus issue, among other cases that we can bring before our Supreme Court of Law. We've got a coronavirus case, and agenda item 2C is asking if there's anybody that is willing to sign on to our jury verdict on the coronavirus issue or any other cases. Is there anybody that knows anyone that is willing to sign on to a jury verdict for the coronavirus issue or any other issues? I'll pause and ask if we've got anybody like that. Anybody? Hearing none. Okay, it's a small group and it's still kind of new. Proceeding on, item 2D here. New cases. Are there any new cases to be brought before our Supreme Court of Law? Hearing none. Janet, welcome. Good to see you.
If I may?
Michael, yes.
Where is Jack from, state, please?
Janet. She's from...
Oh, Janet.
Yes, I believe she's from New Brunswick. Yeah. I think you're...
Oh, is that Janet? From New Brunswick. I tried getting a hold of you this morning, young lady. I can't hear you. You got to put your mic on, Janet.
You're muted, Janet. We can see you talking. Try again. Say something. Well.
Still no sound, Janet. You got to go to the top of the screen. And click on the telephone little tab, and it'll allow you to do that, and you'll get your introduction.
We still can't hear you, Janet. I'm going to continue with
I was going to send you a link. How do I send you a link in here? Is there a chat thing in here? Oh, I see. Okay, never mind. I got it. Chat. Okay, all participants. Okay, I got it. Never mind. Just drop you a link. Oh, not going to work. Control V. There we go. This is one link I can send you right now with the Chinese soldiers in Salt Spring. Janet still can't hear her.
Yeah.
You may have to leave, Janet, and then come back in, maybe. See if your mic works.
Yeah. Yeah, Michael, if you can access the chat window, you can see Dallas did post a link there. I'm not going to chase it down, but...
The one gentleman that was speaking before us, what was his name? Mike, right?
Michael. He's from Florida.
So Michael mentioned something. How can we come together on a solution? They're beating us because we're organized, but we're not organized on a solution. The solution we're all going for is a republic, a true republic. Accountability, correct? How do we get that? We all got to start speaking the same language. So I was in about a month ago. I've been on the road here for quite a bit working on some investigation work. Have you guys looked at unifythepeople.ca site?
I have.
Okay. Now, on the unifythepeople.ca site, I'm actually going to put a link in there for the United States Constitution. I didn't do it last time, but I'm going to get that for you, and I'll send it out to you guys. Don't give the site out. Keep it to yourselves. I'll send it to Chris Charles here. Take it and look at the information on it. The republics need to get a constitution, a true constitution, and I believe the constitution is the only solution that we can get. We can bring like-minded people, honorable people together to get this done. It's a win-win-win for everybody. Once we can educate the people the power of the constitution, returning usury or removing usury back to the final foundation of based on natural resources, et cetera, based on the man and woman as the actual real resource of the management. Gold, silver are not real. We all know they have all the gold and silver, so they'll sell us out. We need to go something better, stronger. That's man and woman, based on that. We had some guys coming yesterday. If you're interested, I'll send information on that. We are going to be putting our site is designed also for Australia. Now, all six provinces and two territories and the U.S. are doing the same thing. Now we know that the Magna Carta is part of the common law of 1666. It gave you the illusion that common law was going to save you, but common law has never saved us. It's been going on since 1666. It was only designed for them. And since 1666, it hasn't worked yet. We haven't won a court case yet in the Corporation of Canada with common law. The judges just
blocked
out. Yeah.
One of the big things that I like to push in this conference is consensus building.
Yeah.
And you've just made a lot of bold propositions about the nature of the cosmic chessboard and the spiritual battle that we're facing. And you seem to be inclined to believe that common law is not really worthy of a whole lot of support. And I'd like to point out a few dissenting views so that perhaps we can work towards a consensus rather than you just grabbing the ball and running with it. Would that be okay?
Sure.
All right. Thank you. Are you familiar with the Norman conquest of England in 1066 AD?
No, I'm not. You have to refresh me.
Okay, well, that was the point in which Roman civil municipal law came in and created a top-down authoritarian form of monarchy, empire government, and it displaced the grassroots, bottom-up, Camelot version of righteous Christian government that was in place prior to that. Prior to that, the local hundred courts, the precinct level hundred courts, political subdivisions of the counties, the jurisdictions of the sheriffs. I believe I've heard you and maybe Janet say that you got sheriffs up there. If you've got sheriffs, you've got counties. If you've got counties, you've got precincts. If you've got precincts, you've got hundred courts. At that point, you've got the right to decentralize the sovereignty and the arrest-making power and the judicial power to call juries and follow due process of law. You've got the right to decentralize all of that right down to local communities of 100 qualified electors. That is the cosmic solution to the problem that we're facing. It's a single model. It's been based on the Bible that's 3,400 years old, back to Exodus 18. Talks about the communities of tens and fifties and hundreds and thousands. That's our solution's at. And it, with all due respect, Dallas, it sounds to me like you're just kind of trying to re-engineer the Roman civil municipal government that has been screwed with us since 1666 and all those to every since 1066. Notice the repetition of 66 there. The devil worshippers like that number 66. So we've got problems, but we've also got solutions if we're consensus builders and we listen to the people that have done the research and know where the answers are rather than just try to build something new when it's already been rebuilt. We don't need to reinvent the wheel. The solution to responsible self-governing communities has already been built. We don't need to try to re-engineer it. So I don't mean to rant or raise my tone of voice.
Well, it's all good, but see, the issue up here, our sheriffs aren't sheriffs like the United States sheriffs, Republic sheriffs. Sheriffs in the United States have the authority to arrest governors, et cetera, if they didn't lose that mandate. They used to have it. Our sheriffs are the sheriffs of Nottingham, the Crown Corporation sheriffs. They have more authority than a judge, more authority than a police officer, more authority than a city police officer. They are the highest. They have more jurisdiction, and they do not swear an oath to the people. They are Nottingham sheriffs of the Crown Corporation. They swear an oath to the Queen and her heirs. That's it. They're not like we have sheriffs, like you guys have sheriffs in the United States. They say they're sheriffs.
Can we share the microphone back and forth a little bit here,
yeah,
Dallas?
Yeah.
Thank you. I dare suggest the sheriffs are just as screwed up down here in the States as they are up there in Canada. You probably got a few honest sheriffs up there in Canada somewhere, and in the 3,000 plus counties in the USA, we've also got a few honest sheriffs that are trying to do what's right. And the inherited common law jurisdiction of the office, the sheriff's office is a common law office. And if you knew the common law empowerment, the rules of the common law that govern the sheriff's office, you wouldn't be so negative about what our capabilities are with doing with the sheriffs in Canada or the USA or anywhere. The solution to problems with corrupted sheriffs is to assemble qualified electors, precinct captains, justice of the peace, judicial officers from the precincts. The precincts are the political subdivision of the county. The county is the shire. The shire is the jurisdiction of the sheriff. So the sheriff derives his authority from the chief officers of the precincts, and anybody filling those vacant offices of the precincts under the sheriff's office can vote him out of office and put a more honorable person into office at any time that they so develop a consensus vote of confidence in the old sheriff and decide to put a new one in there. It can be quick and easy. That's in terms of law. It's another issue to have adequate enforcement. You need your grassroots empowerment, but if you've got enough grassroots empowerment organized, the law is on your side to take the office back and away from the corruption, and I believe that's a remedy there. I'll yield.
If I may interject.
Yes.
Michael, Florida. Yeah, I think a big difference is this, and I'll try to surmise it briefly. In Canada, their sheriffs, they're de facto are on steroids. In America, our de facto is on vitamins. I think they're head and shoulders above in our de facto criminality. We have a little better of a chance down here, and that's demonstrated in the fact that we have a huge group of sheriffs that are organizing to fight tyranny nationwide. And that's the Constitutional Sheriff's Peace Officer Association. I don't agree with Richard Mack and everything, and I have some issues with him, but I find that organization refreshing. I find that organization very refreshing, and I think there's a lot of hope in it. During the uprising in Virginia regarding the Second Amendment sanctuary county movement, it was the only sheriffs who were advocating forming posses, grand juries, and militias were those sheriffs involved in the Constitutional Peace Officer Sheriffs Association. So we have a lot of positive activity happening down here. And because of their condition up there being far greater criminal and de facto, they have an uphill battle compared to us, I think. I yield for comments.
Thank you, Michael. Others?
Lewis. Yes.
Lewis, yes.
Lewis, Michigan. I'd like to comment on what Dallas mentioned as well with regards to not having any successes with the common law. Here in Michigan, that's where we're finding that the remedy is. It's only the Supreme Court that recognizes it. The lower courts are not recognizing it. And I'm going to put on screen here this link I'm going to put here in the chat for anyone to review. But this is a case that I'd ask our assembly here on Michigan to review and discuss. And this is a matter on takings. Okay, and they refer to the common law in this probably about 55 times. I don't know what my wife is doing with our dogs downstairs, so apologies there. But the fact is, the reason that, let me just really summarize this really quickly right here. There are two cases. The county took these people's property. In one case, in one instance, it was for just $8.41 in unpaid property taxes, which grew to $285.81 after interest, penalties, and fees. Well, They took the property for the delinquency. They sold the property at auction for $24,500, and they retained all of the sales proceeds, you know, in excess of the $285. In another case, a gentleman owed $6,000 in unpaid taxes. They took his property, did the same thing, sold it at auction for $82,000, and they kept all of the proceeds. So he lost in every lower court. He lost, and they and the courts were using a statute they created out of an act of prostitution, like in the late 70s, where someone
point,
had
point of order. Point of order. Somebody is coughing in the background, and it's very disruptive to hearing Lewis speak. Please mute yourself. I yield.
What they did was a man had gotten caught with a prostitute within the city of Detroit. They took his car and they sold it at auction and kept the proceeds. The man's wife sued because she's like, half of this car is mine. I needed to get back and forth to work. It happened in the late 70s. She lost. They then applied that. It took a few years, created a statute out of it. And they have been taking property and keeping the proceeds at all sales ever since. These two got the case to go to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court said it is the common law, and they provide throughout this document how Michigan's common law was adopted from England. It reviews England common law. They state in this document no less than 50 times. Part of this is the summary, but the other is the actual opinion of the court. What they did was kick it. They said this is wrong, and the lawyers argued. I think Janet said the common law courts are using lawyers and judges. Yes, they are. However, the judge sits in a dual capacity. They can either exist and operate in the de jure capacity or the de facto. But it's the Supreme Court that recognizes the common law. And they kicked this back down to the appeals court and said, you are to apply the Michigan common law right here. And this is a takings issue. And they said, do you know how many cases? You know how many? They said, we don't care. Get it done. We're following this, our assembly here, because this affects a number of people. Not only here in Michigan, there are about 13 other states that do the same thing. So this is a lot of money. So with that, it is the common law where we have found here is the only remedy. Other than that, they are literally steamrolling and just bulldozing anyone that stands up against them as a single man or woman. I yield.
Thank you, Lewis. Comments, questions?
Michael, Florida, since no one else spoke up to comment, I will. Here in my county in South Florida, the other alternative to common law is, I want to say brute force, but nonviolent brute force. We had a situation in a county commission chamber meeting where many of the audience participants were either applauding or cheering in some form or fashion for a particular speaker. And we were reprimanded by the board, the county commission board, to stop. And because we outnumbered them and we filled the chambers with people, we refused to obey them. And we basically mocked them and ridiculed them with our continued disobedience, civil disobedience. But it was nonviolent. And we're not advocating any form, I'm not advocating any form of violence. But because of our large numbers, We were fearless, and we overrode their demands. They would have had to, get a lot of sheriffs in the room to get all of us out. So that's just food for thought. We've got to raise our numbers, and maybe it's going to take pressure and pain that will provoke the Canadian people and the American people to rise up. Maybe we need a Joe Biden and a Harris presidency to provoke us.
Oh my God!
We're too comfortable. Yeah, we might be too comfortable with a Trump presidency. So, just food for thought.
I don't think it's going to make a much difference because, you know, you look at Trump now running around, going along with the fake plandemic of the moron virus, right?
Yeah.
You know, I got COVID now, hiding out, et cetera, et cetera. So, what?
He's feeding everybody the Kool-Aid, and we got a bunch of Kool-Aid drinkers, so they're happy.
Is that what he's doing?
Yeah. Republican, okay. Conservative Kool-Aid drinkers.
Yeah. So with common law, we had thousands and thousands of sovereigns that have taken the courts here using common law. Yes, some have won seatbelt fines, some have won lower level whatever rate. Just they get their stay. The judge just throws them out of court. Doesn't even want to listen to the crap. Right? This is I'm not even going to get into this. Rather than listen to educate the people in the courtroom, they'll close the courtrooms down to the last courtroom of the day, and then we had one of our gentlemen go in there with common law, and he wouldn't stand up. He wouldn't acknowledge the judge. The judge grabbed the sheriffs. They threw them in jail. So that's where he sat. Dean Clifford sat 5 years in prison using common law. Our lower level courts will not recognize common law. They won't even give you a dime. As soon as you walk in there and say, I'm a man of the earth, or I'm a free man, or et cetera, et cetera, I don't recognize your court system, your admiral court system, et cetera, that's it. You're arrested, thrown in jail.
If I may interject, I've done the same thing in courts here from Ohio to Florida. I've refused to stand and honor the judge, and I've never been threatened with arrest, and I've never even been reprimanded. I've been stared at with evil eyes, but I yield.
Well, I recorded it. Cody Holler went in, and he got drug out twice and thrown into jail. Dean Clifford, the same thing.
If I may, I believe what you're saying. I'm not disputing it, but I'm simply illustrating the difference in tyranny up there and down here. You have a hardcore tyranny on steroids. We have a soft tyranny with vitamins, taking vitamins. You know, it's just that simple. We have a greater chance than you do. You're directly ruled, known by the queen.
Yeah.
We're a subset of the queen and the Vatican. So, I yield.
So what we're looking at is we've looked at all the court cases that we've lost, all the patriots that have been thrown and detained. So we have a huge team in Alberta that's been working on it. Donna Farrelly, she filed with the Queen's Bench to produce the Federation Papers. We also offered a $25,000 reward for anybody to find the Federation Papers. They don't exist. Or even this thing called the Constitution. So our solution is we're going to go full force with educating the people on a Constitution. Hopefully they'll figure that out. At the same time, we're going to teach them and educate them with the Constitution that we, the people, will have sheriffs, the deputies will be accountable to the Constitution, et cetera, et cetera. People are starting to listen to that. They're starting to become educated. They're starting to see the fraud that's going on. But right now, we have nothing to stand on. Nothing.
Dallas, may I? You're referring to the Constitution. Can you elaborate what document you're referring to there?
Well, they use a thing called the B&A Act, which is called the British North American Act. They say it's a constitution. It's not a constitution. It's never been ratified by the people. It was created by British monarchy. It's a dead copy. It's in the United Kingdom's vaults. It's unseen. They say they use this B&A Act as a constitution act. In 1982... Communist Trudeau was selected by the Bilderberg Group. He came in, wiped the Bank of Canada out. then established the Canadian Constitutional Act, they call it. He repatriated the Constitution. He added a Charter of Rights and Freedoms. The Charter of Rights and Freedoms are nothing to do with we the people. It's a charter for the corporation, which gives the corporations all the power. Puts them as personhood.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have nothing.
You don't have right? nothing.
We have nothing. We have no law. We live in a lawless society.
You're an heir, sir. You're just not aware of where the solution to the problem is. You've got the common law tradition in a more pure and unadulterated form than we in the states do. We in the states have municipal charters that a group of mind control slaves got together and ratified to create a municipal Roman Empire top-down authoritarian model of government for each and every one of our states and counties and our entire nation. You guys don't have that dysfunctionality. You guys have a general organic common law tradition that apparently you've just been propagandized out of being aware of. We've both got the same common law heritage. We've both got the rights to invoke that common law tradition at any time, and that brings us the authority of posse comitatus. And you're talking in terms of educating people. I suggest first you spend a bit more time on educating yourself. When the Bible says when the blind lead the blind, they both fall into the pit. And the essence of our solution is our common law tradition. That's where our right to trial by jury comes from. That decentralizes the power right down to the people. And with all due respect, we're not talking about those common law mechanisms enough. We're talking about rearranging the chairs on the Titanic by tweaking the Roman Empire civil municipal form of government that we're under. And I'm sorry, it's a big can of manure, and it needs to be thrown out in the compost pile and get back to the original common law tradition, not the adulterated version that came in after the Norman conquest of 1066 and Magna Carta and all that. It was all adulterated. And that's why you're inclined to speak badly about common law, because all you know is the adulterated, screwed-up version of it. And no doubt it is true that it is tyrannical and oppressive with a few little common law elements thrown in just to keep the people placated. That has to go, just like you're saying. But if we need to have a clear vision of what we're going to replace it with. And if you read the documents that I've web-linked in the conference education here, we've got it blueprinted. We go clear back to Exodus 18 that shows the exact model of individual heads of household are qualified electors. They form their own 10-household township communities, very small, decentralized, sovereign, self-governing communities, and those build on up to the 50s and to the hundreds and to the thousands. 1,000 of these qualified electors is a common law county, a common law sheriff's jurisdiction, and it's grassroots, bottom-up accountable, and nobody from any top-down authoritarian jurisdiction has the right to come in. Such an act, and coming in and bossing people around, is an act of war, and 1,000 assault rifles need to be pointed instantaneously at anybody that comes in to any sheriff's jurisdiction where the sheriff is a righteous, honorable, accountable man. And that's where our solution is. We need to be talking about guns, like the scene in the Matrix movie where Neo asks, or Morpheus, I think, asks Neo what he needs to start the project, and Neo says, "I need guns, lots of guns." And boom, the whole scene changed to all kinds of assault rifles and grenade launchers. This is what we need, posse comitatus. And hopefully it'll just be a show of force, and it won't have to be anything other than the display. But the constructive notice of treason documents, this is where we exhaust the pathway of peace. We send out the documents asking the corrupted political leaders if they've got any objection to our organizing constitutional sheriff's jurisdiction, shires, counties, whatever you want to call them, because we've got these rights. These are part of our common law tradition, which is part of our constitutions, no matter how you slice it, whether you're north or south of our border. We've got this power. We've got the model already engineered. If you read the documents that have been discussed here, and then you should go out and educate after you got the blueprint, the plan correct. That isn't coming from me or us. It's coming from God. It's based on the Bible, and it's our common law tradition that carries on those Bible principles. So I'm sorry to kind of rant here, but I do believe
don't get me wrong. I understand you mean well. You have 100% what you're saying, that in the States possibly we can make it work. Right now, we have a different story in the Corporation of Canada. People believe Canada is a country, that we have a constitution. We have nothing. So we educate the people that we're creating a constitution. So I put a link in the page there. It's to the Ontario Constitution. I know that I had a gentleman yesterday phone me from Nova Scotia. He just found out about us. And I had a good talk with him 2 hours yesterday. He read the Nova Scotia Constitution. He's reading the New Brunswick Constitution right now, I guess, supposedly. That's why I was getting a hold of the lady in New Brunswick today. I talked to the lady there. I asked Elizabeth to get a hold of me. So we have nothing right now. We've listened to, I've watched Kevin Annette since 2007, 2008 run his assemblies, which to the ITC, which he put out false information. Now, one of his court cases ever went anywhere. Very fraudulent,
yeah.
Very abusive.
Yeah, he's another we should certify as.
Pardon me?
He's another we should certify as not a qualified elector.
Yeah, I'm putting through a whole information on that one, and then I'm also gonna debunk Anna Von Vries because we have a lot of people that are following her crap too. So he's one on the list right now. I've been watching Christopher Jay. He's pushing 100% common law, but it's common law that he's pushing. Now here's another one for you. We have this team in Vernon, run by Joshua and Dennis. They've actually sent out confirmations for people to sign this declaration where they're going to go around and arrest all the mayors and the city council member, anybody in the local community that's not following the law of the land. Well,
yeah.
Until we have numbers, until we have a very large segment of the population. So we're looking at the numbers we're looking at is about 260,000. That's all we need in the province of British Columbia. Alberta, the same thing. The smaller provinces, we're not going to have any problem with them. Cape Breton's only got 100,000. These smaller provinces, they could rise up faster than we can. So Quebec is rising up right now. They are getting very angry. And Quebec could be the burst in the bubble for us. So our solution is we're going to educate the people. Even if we have a constitution, okay, that's fine. Well, that constitution does not work for you. Let's create a constitution that works for you. We'll set up our constitution. So I put a post in there. I'd like you guys to read the constitutional draft for Ontario. As I say, the drafts. And what we're establishing is we're moving ourselves from the Vatican. We're also unalienable rights, et cetera, et cetera. There are only eight platforms, that's it. The articles will come after. It's how we're going to govern ourselves. And in those things, we are going to set up and create the laws. Natural law from the Creator. Then we'll move forward. And I'll give you an example. The Alberta Constitution is very, very well done. It has 11 regions. They broke up the province into 11 regions. Each town has one seat, one vote. Each county has one seat, one vote. Each region has one seat, one vote. And that way we can protect it. Now, I looked at the United States when they set up the Pennsylvania, which you guys created, I think it was two senators. Didn't matter about population, the senators all got two seats, which is a very good idea. But it's still not working. So we're going to reverse that. And we feel it's very important. The first objective is they can't go against the Constitution. The sheriffs will uphold the Constitution, and anybody that's we hire administrators, there'll be no more politicians. The best man and woman gets the job. We have a database. We have also some stuff being created right now. It's already created. Actually, we'll be launching. So the people in the local communities, if they want to build a bridge, it goes to the local community. X amount of dollars, it gets voted on by the community. The community says yes or no, and it's transparent. There's nothing hidden. Your name's either yes or no. Everything has to be transparent. Sort of what I looked at the cantons in Switzerland, how they do it. Now you look at Switzerland's, their constitution, they fought for 1,500 years, and they created their constitution. They finally got it. They implemented direct democracy, which is very important, where the people control legislation. We look at areas that win and areas that lose. And we understand that the local thing has to start at the local level, the grassroots, all the way up to the top. And we are in a very, very problematic way in the Corporation of Canada. We have no rights. You know, a lot of people watch the U.S. media. They don't need a search warrant to enter your house in the Corporation of Canada. That's all U.S. stuff. People follow the U.S.
Ellis, can I, please?
Yep.
You're talking about the problem. You said earlier you're going to have the sheriff obey the Constitution, right? Didn't you say that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you modify that wording to say that you're going to have the sheriff obey the common law? The Constitution is such an ambiguous sack of manure that the words are meaningless. But the common law has specific meaning. It's based on principles. Constitution documents are unprincipled.
The next month here, as Dennis and those guys try to prosecute the mayors in Vernon and Kelowna and Kamloops, some of our team members are starting to see this is not going to help us in the long run, right? We have to establish an agreement upon the people how they want to govern themselves.
Can we share the microphone back and forth more? You make a point, and then you go on a big story, and I want to respond. It's about consensus building. You got to have consensus about how to responsibly self-govern. One guy can't just give a whole bunch of stories, and then everybody goes, okay. It don't work that. It's not organic law. You know, constitutional law means organic law if you look it up in the dictionary. The two terms, constitutional law means organic law means constitutional law. You can look up either term. It'll direct you to the other. That means consensus building. We got to be talking point by point. You can't throw 40 points on the table and then say, are you going to agree? It don't work that way. All right, thank you. And I'm sorry what set me off there. I should probably yield. But,
may I have the floor, Charles?
Nikki, yes, go ahead.
Yeah, and can I share my screen? A picture speaks.
Two, Nikki, are you taking us off point from what we were discussing,
no,
or is it related
okay,
to
so
the...
Okay, so let me go ahead then and say what I want to say, okay? Is because common law, if you look up stare decisis, in the United States and England, the common law has traditionally adhered to the precedents of earlier cases and sources of law. The principle is known as stare decisis. It distinguishes the common law from civil law systems. It doesn't really change much, which give great weight to codes and laws and the opinions of scholars explaining them. Now, go back to King John's concession to Pope Innocent III, right? What he did is he turned the entire kingdom over to Pope Innocent III. That's right there in your history books, in our history books as well, because that was after the Magna Carta.
What year was that?
What year was this? Hang on a minute. Let me. I'm looking here. If I was showing my screen, you'd probably catch it already.
Well, we could look it up. Innocent.
Yes. King John's 1213. 1213.
Okay.
Yes, King John's concessions to Pope Innocent III. And Then, if you go to Bouvier's Law Dictionary and you look up feudal law, okay, you'll see that in the United States, the fourth definition in the 1856, in the United States, the feudal law was never in full vigor. Though some of its principles are still retained, those principles are so interwoven with every part of our jurisprudence, says Tingleman, or whoever he is, that to attempt to eradicate them would be to destroy the whole. They are massy stones worked into the foundation of our legal edifice. Most of the inconveniences attending them have been removed, and the few that remain can easily be removed by acts of the legislature. Right?
Nancy.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, you were talking about educating the people. Well, if the people don't know where it broke, how are they going to fix it? So, yes, you are right. This is the way townships and everything and precincts ought to be organized according to Scripture. Not a problem with it, John. John, I keep calling you John, I don't know why, but Charles. But nonetheless, people have got to know why they need to go to that because, hey, you know, the courts are just doing their job. You can't fight City Hall and this, that, and the other thing. But if you show the fraud from the get-go, and, you know that in 1773, this was set up by William Guy Carr, who was, considered, a conspiracy theorist in 1958 when his books were shown, you know, to show what had happened in 1773 when a group of wealthy people got together to take over the world and all of its resources. And to go into the 1787 Constitution of the United States using what the words meant in 1785, you'll see that it was we the people of the United Nobility. States meant nobility at that time. In order to form, in 1787, that is, it meant nobility. In 1828, in Webster's Dictionary, states means nobility. In order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. And if you look at the definition for esquires in 1785, you will see that they are the younger sons of noblemen. Esquires do ordain and establish this constitution for the united nobility of America.
Hey, point of order, you've been going on for 3 minutes and 55
Thank you.
Seconds.
Say again?
You've been going on now for 4 minutes.
Okay.
We do have a 3-minute time limit here, Nikki.
Let me just go ahead and sum it up with this. Constructive fraud, and that's on number 3 of your agenda. Maybe that should be brought before the courts or however you're going to do it, rather than going after specific people. Because a lot of people don't know this stuff. They haven't looked into it. I'm just giving you this information, and I put some of the links in the chat area there, so you have it. Okay. I yield. I'm sorry about that. I go off on tangents.
Actually, I was enjoying what you had to say there. Thank you very much.
Well, you brought some interesting points to the table, and I can't help but think that if we're going to do anything with it, we should try to work towards a consensus around the issues that you've raised. You're just dropping this big, immense thought off here, Nikki. Don't go running off. But Michael, did you have anything, or can I kind of respond a little bit there?
Go ahead. I'd love to hear your comments.
Okay. Well, Nikki, we agree that the whole American Revolution and even the people behind the Declaration of Independence in a lot of ways, and definitely the Constitution document, and to some extent Articles of Confederation. We're comp- compromised. But the way you're summarizing the Declaration of Independence document as just for the nobility, I think that turns it into a problem for us. It turns it into a liability in our ability to move on the cosmic chessboard, the spiritual battlefield here. And I would much rather use the Declaration of Independence as an asset if we presume that all of the noble words in there were not just for the nobility, but they were for the people, like the people are referenced in the document. That's what it says on its surface, even though we highly suspect that it's being manipulated and spun. See, they wanted us to divorce from England. One of the worst words in the Declaration of Independence is the word independence. That cut us off from our common law tradition, which flowed through the monarchy of England. We should have brought quo warranto criminal complaint against the de facto king of England. We should have challenged the throne. But no, we created a new system with Roman Empire model of government that was every single bit as evil as the Roman Empire model of government that the de facto king of England was oppressing us under. George Washington was a jackbooted Nazi. What he did to the Whiskey Rebellion and Shays Rebellion was flat evil.
I don't call George Washington a Nazi. I call him a Bolshevik.
Hey, wait a minute. Wait. First of all, Charles, what you did, you've been talking about the Declaration of Independence. What I was referring to is a preamble to the U.S. Constitution. The Declaration of Independence has a three-step strategy. When in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to, number one, primary purpose, dissolve the political bands that connected them with another. And in that day, it was the Whigs and the Tories. In Yeshua's day, it was the Pharisees and the Sadducees. Today, it's the Democrats and the Republicans. So that's one part of the system right there, or the solution. The second is, and then, to assume amongst the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and nature's God entitle them. That's what you're talking about. That's what we all want. And the third part of that is to have a decent respect to the opinions or for the opinions of mankind, and to declare the causes which impel us to the separation. I'm giving the causes that impel to the separation. So I'm following the Declaration of Independence. That first paragraph is left out. Even behind the scenes and the backdrop of the Trump-Biden discussion, debate, was only the second paragraph where we are given the authority to alter or abolish a government that is not working in our favor because of what was said in the first paragraph that is left out in recent teachings in the schools. There is a first paragraph that says it all for Canada, United States, and all over the world.
Okay.
And with that, I yield. And you
thank you. I guess I did have that wrong. I thought you were talking about the Declaration when you were talking about the Constitution. And your position is much stronger there. I apologize for my misunderstanding.
That's okay, John. I still do that. Charles. That's okay, because this is what I'm trying to say about all these other people that you brought up earlier. If they don't know it, they don't know until they know it and then admit it. Because when they say our democracy, the Democrats especially, our democracy. Wait a minute. We don't have a democracy according to that. We're supposed to have a republic. And a republic is us in our natural state of being. I will yield.
Quick note, I don't see any inherent conflict between the word democracy and republic. But I'd like to go on to another larger point that I'd like to emphasize is that...
If I may, Charles, before you move on real quick, just to respond to that lady, David,
sure,
from here. I just wanted to say we are a representative republican form of government. I yield.
Okay.
Here.
Okay. Yeah, I don't see any conflict with the word democracy, though, there.
But democracy.
Well, we're not a democracy at all.
Yeah,
Right. We've never been the Constitution or the Declaration. None of them ever mentioned the word democracy at all.
Democracy is mob rule. Is mob rule.
And sheep voting on what's for dinner.
They find the U.S. is a democracy now. It's not a republic.
No, the U.S., the Democrats are trying to say, even the Republicans, they say all the time on the Tell Lie Vision that, you know, we are a democracy, and we are not. A democracy is two wolves and a sheep voting on what's for dinner. That is
That's
the
right.
farthest thing that our forefathers wanted for America. We 100%. Have we elect representatives to represent us, but, you know, the laws are supposed to be passed by the consent of the governed. And I do not consent.
Yeah, and we have a democratic process in our constitutional republic, is the way it was taught to me in high school. We have a democratic process in our republican form of government. There you go.
Democratic republic.
Yeah.
I'd say you guys have a two system. And I watch your elections for long times, and they are democracy. You have two wolves. That's what you guys got. You guys were a republic, based on a republic, but right now, you guys are definitely a democracy, and that's the
They're pretending to be a democracy, sir. We still have our republican form of government, but yes, they are two wolves, and we are the sheep, and they are definitely trying to eat us.
The system has failed down there because no one's following the republic constitution, right? And that's the biggest problem.
Absolutely. The American people have been lulled to sleep by the Tell Lie Vision and, the frequencies and just the bullshit rhetoric coming out of Washington after World War II, what'd they do? You know, everybody got a house, everybody got a job, everybody got a car, everybody got a chicken in every pot, you know. We got the New Deal. They took our gold. They gave us new, funny money. And, everybody was happy. And guess what? They even made the wife go to work. And, and then they let the schools raise our children. And, my parents were from Canada. So I don't see Canada do much better than we are. Actually, you guys are doing a lot worse than we are. So at least we still got our guns. And that's why they're scared shitless, people. So anyway, Dave and the Thumb here, I yield.
Here, Dave.
Lewis of Michigan, I'd like to just correct one thing about Dave and the Thumb statement. Everybody didn't even get access to what you just mentioned. There were people, in fact, locked out of those things after World War II, such as the GI Bill and, funding for homes, allowing one to build equity and support, their family over the next 50 years. So that's part of this powder keg that everyone sees going on right now. And one of Dallas's earlier statements, he says, this has been going on, I think, in the States for a number of years now. No, since its inception, there have been certain periods of time where it has bubbled to the top. And this happens to be one of those periods of time. But this went on 50 years ago. And it's going to continue every time frame until there is some equality established, one way or another. I yield.
Did you say your name was Lewis?
Yes, I'm Lewis.
Thank you for your comments. I do appreciate that. Yeah, you're exactly right. And I remember when Colonel Eisenhower hosed down those GIs that came to collect their just dues that they were owed from World War One. And what did they do? They sent them down to Florida to build that frickin' railroad right when that hurricane was coming. And you think they knew that hurricane was coming that killed every one of those poor bastards? You bet your ass they knew.
Well,
anyway,
Eisenhower was part of the Bolsheviks, right?
Oh, Eisenhower was a Jew, and
I'm being polite. Eisenhower was he's the one that exterminated and assassinated five-star general Patton. When Patton got to Germany, he found out he fought the wrong enemy, He was going to go back to the States and tell the American people. He should have took the 7th Cavalry that day and took lead and ended the Bolsheviks right there.
Amen,
and down.
Brother.
Oh,
amen.
I know the truth of history. I know the truth of history. Trust me.
Oh, I believe you.
We're in big trouble here. So this battle was in front of us. So, I mean, I watched a show last night. It was actually broadcasted. One of our teammates came in today. There was a poll done last night. It was done in the United States. 72% of the United States figure there'll be a civil war within 6 months.
We're already in it. It started. It's already started. And I don't know if you want to call it civil, but, you know, it is getting ugly.
Yeah, I know civil war was called civil. We should have got rid of war. We should have called it was tyranny war. So we're heading into something. And the biggest,
Bankers. They're bankers' wars, and you're exactly right. But who are the Bolsheviks? They are the Jews.
Well, okay. Well, Lenin came from New York, and Trotsky came from Ottawa. They came from Ottawa and New York. They're shipped over there, funded there, sent right over there to set up Stalin. Before Stalin, you know, the Bolshevik Revolution, 100 million people were murdered in Ukraine and Poland, et cetera, et cetera. We know this now. The history's out there. Information is very well available. It's been very been suppressed for a lot of years, but it was documented, hidden, and now it's becoming more, you know, to the open public. This is what we're up against. So,
and they use the Jesuit code of gematria.
Yeah.
You know, that's how they code everything. And anyway,
this is Nikki, and I just want to let you know that after World War One, there was the peace conference, and I have a link to the inside story of the peace conference, and you'll see in there that there were spokesmen for the Jews. At that conference, spokesmen. The Jews themselves, especially the ones in Poland, Vilna, Poland, they were dead set against it, because what it would mean is that the League of Nations, which morphed into, of course, the UN, would be able to come on their soil and take over. So anyway, with that, I yield. It's in the chat area.
If I may, all Jews are not bankers, but all bankers are Jews. I yield.
May I?
I already said, may I, and Dave stepped on me.
Sure, go ahead. They're Jews that say they are Jews and are not. That's all I was going to add. All right.
Let's get back on track towards solutions. We can talk for hours and days and years and months about how much each of us knows about history. Let's get back on solutions, please. I yield.
May I? This is Gary Don in Michigan. May I?
Good.
Yes.
Yes.
I have a question, please.
Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, where does Electoral College play a part in all this? Democracy and Republic and all that. Where does that play a part?
Good question.
Thank you.
Well, if I might, that's one of our agenda items on the invitation list. I don't know if you're trying
I'm
to build
trying
on that
to
or not.
But, which one is that, Charles?
I think it's probably 6 or 7. I'm not sure.
Okay.
Let me go ahead and launch into an answer here. I don't want to go searching for documents. The Electoral College is an assembly of electors. Electors is a term derived from the common law tradition. It means a responsibly self-governing member of a township. That's what the word elector means. Anybody telling you different is a liar. Okay? You have to be a member of a local, responsibly self-governing community to the best of your ability and good faith anyway, if you're going to claim to be an elector. Presently, I think our group here is the only one, the only group in on the planet that's even talking about these issues. And even though, like Nancy's saying, the Constitution document was engineered by an aristocratic nobility that wanted top-down Roman Empire authoritarian control over all the people, they were forced to compromise and throw in some powerful common law elements, okay, in order to get their secret Masonic meeting. So there's some good Masons in there that were insisting on some good provisions, and they threw in the thing that electors will be the ones to choose the President of the United States. Okay, and that meant people of common law jurisdiction that are not the 14th Amendment slaves. That are. Why do you think they've got two elections? They've got the normal mass election that's all a circus, Democrats and Republicans, partisan, just total smoke and mirrors. And then guess what? The electors, a whole different group, decides all the issues because they're the ones that have the real power. And technically speaking, that's common law jurisdiction. This is why it's so important. One of the first items in our invitation here on our agenda list is the certification of the qualified elector status. If we push forward on that, we will be in position to declare who is the President of the United States of America. The present process for selecting electors is Roman Empire municipal. It's de facto electors. The Democrat and Republican Party leadership, they submit their list from one of my more reputable sources. They submit lists of who they declare to be their list of electors to the secretaries of the state, and the secretaries of state usually just rubber stamp whatever whether the Democrats won the general election or the Republicans won. They take the list from whichever party won in that state, and they plug in that list of electors without question. They're not people of good reputation in the community, as the common law tradition requires for the term elector. They're a bunch of drones for either the Democrat or the Republican Party, and that's definitely not what the word elector is supposed to be all about. And so they're under, I think, Dave and the Thumb or Gary Dodd. That's the issue with electors that I am quite enthused about pursuing. I don't know if that's similar to what you were seeking when you raised the issue here, but thank you for prompting me. I should pause here and ask if that addressed your issue or if you've got further follow-up on that, Gary.
Well, I've seen it this way all my life, and there's been no explanation, there's no education on it whatsoever that I know about, and let's put it that way. And it seems to me that a plain democracy would be the majority of the voters, not some special group that gets together and votes whatever they feel like voting. I may be wrong there, but I just look at it as all these many, many years. This is how they elect the president, and it's nowhere in the Constitution that I can find. It has a nobility to it, you know, because only the rich and famous and hardheads can get to control it. And it looks like Jewish policy to me, because the Jews always do what they always do. They always end up like cream on top of the milk. They're the 2 or 3, 4% and they end up in charge. And if you're not careful, they'll end up in charge of this call. Just look how they take over. Just look what they run and what they own and what they control. What they control and what they own is two different things too. I yield. Thank you.
Well, I don't comprehend, Gary, what you're proposing there. Are you saying that the Electoral College is inherently bad, and that it's an aristocratic elitist thing? What are you saying?
I'm saying that without complete knowledge of it, from what I've been informed with, and this is not perfect knowledge, that the Jews control the Electoral College.
Oh, 100%. Bought and paid for.
There you go.
Lock, stock, and barrel.
So what else do you need to say?
Yeah, I agree with 100%. You look, you're like a quote. It's just a mess. A mess.
If I may?
That's presently because they're not common law qualified electors. It's a zoo presently. The provision in the Constitution was actually a good thing, I do believe, because it relates to common law. We can capitalize. We can and should capitalize on that rather than what I fear is the proposition from some here, perhaps, that whole provision about electors electing the president is a bad thing. I believe it's a good thing, I should probably yield there. I yield.
How do they control it? And then I'll yield to the lady that was requesting the floor. How do they control it? Anyone could answer that?
If I may.
I believe the nomination process is from the Democratic and Republican leadership. They each submit their lists to the secretaries of state. If the Democrats win in one state, the Democrat Party submits their list of electors, and then the Secretary of State rubber stamps that, and those electors make their votes known, and then that gets forward to the United States Senate for reading and declaration of who's the president. I think that's how it works, and that would be how theoretical the Jews control it, but I dare suggest the Jesuits and the Roman Catholics are a bigger evil than the so-called Pharisee Jews. But either way, we got a problem there. I yield.
Lady?
Well, thank you, sir. And so I had a conversation with somebody in Pam from Michigan. Okay, thank you. In regards to, there's different layers, okay? And so you said earlier, somebody said it was a zoo. And isn't it like all of these are electoral votes, these delegates? I asked a friend, I says, how do we get delegates? And so she looked it up, you know, and she's kind of confused. She says, I don't know. See, she's not been to school in 30 years, so we really haven't looked at these things. But there have been people that have been studying this for, you know, 30, 40, 50 years. And the ones that are in their 70s, 80s, and 90s and are still able to communicate these things if they're not, you know, already demented by the chemicals and stuff in the air and what they're drinking and everything else, you know, they're not able to pass it on. But if they are still able to pass these things on, well, thank God for that, because these kids need it, and they're not getting it because they're being programmed by the TV, the radio, and everything else, and that's just the other part of the game. So then there's the other part of the game is when you're out on the golf course. The other part of the game is the one when you're at the, you know, the bar. Another, so all these different layers, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, you know, these are the ones that are going to decide who's going to be, you know, the winners of the game. I yield. Am I right or wrong? I really want to know if I'm wrong. Right. Thank you.
Go ahead, Charles. Yes.
Lewis, go ahead.
No, I think, was that a question, Pam, that you were posing?
Have I kind of summed it up, how that the game goes? Because, you know, this is, I'm really new to this. And, you know, all this stuff is just kind of like, you know, doesn't seem right. And when I talk to people, they're like, oh, you're crazy, you know. Well, it's only the crazy ones that are really the ones that are putting their neck out there. And if you think about it, David mentioned this to somebody earlier about the dollar bills. We talked about this a couple weeks ago. You know, the one and the five and the ten. And they're showing how the towers are going down, you know, and then the 21 is where the mask is and all these videos and everything. So they're telling us what they're going to do. So who's in charge of all of the skills in the whole wide world, right? Well, they dumbed us down, right? They brought us here and put all these stupid things on so we can watch it and be, you know, amused by all these things and not really have a skill. Well, all the other nations around us, right, that, you know, have, you know, all of our parents probably came from different nations, right, and they came here to the testing grounds, and they all had skills. They came here with their skills, and they went and they farmed, or else they went a little bit further, and they went and, you know, dug up some dirt and found some minerals or whatever, you know, so everyone had a skill. But now the people that are here, they're just like, oh, yeah, I'm just going to sit back, watch TV, and watch how everybody else made this skill. Oh, look how they did that skill. You know, and they solve a problem in half an hour, you know. Sorry, I'm getting so pissed, like the lady that was on earlier. But, and it didn't sound very nice, you know, so I'm sorry. But what my thing is right now is we have this nation, America. We all love it. And we're all of different, you know, opinions, and that's okay. But I think on the general consensus, we all do get along. We all want our country to survive. But the other countries may not want us to survive. So I think what we need to be doing is, you know, like what you're doing here, Charles, we appreciate what you're teaching, and it's very good, common rules, godly principles, and we need to get our children educated and with some skills. I yield.
Okay, thank you. Then if I may, Charles, I'd like to my opinion on the Electoral College, and it's going to be different from everyone's on this call. I do agree with you, and it's a common, they brought a common law principle. However, because of the racist roots of this country / corporation, it was applied with a racist filter. So it was implicated at the same time of the 3/5 rules. It was a part of that compromise in terms of population and making sure those states that allowed for the enslavement of another being, often referred to as slave states, to maintain their power within the Congress or the legislative branch, and make sure that they had you know, control over selecting who was the president. Bottom line. So I don't disagree that it is a common law principle that came from England. We're in agreement there. How it was applied here and has been applied since has its roots in racism, and as such needs to, it's one of the main reasons, in my opinion, that we're still dealing with this some 50 years, 55 years after I've entered this plane, and we're still dealing with this, and we're going to continue. So it does, I guess the issue is, who is the elector? Okay, who is the elector? Making population an issue. Okay, as one man, one vote, there are some issues there. So I'd like to hear what you're proposing and how the being elector might influence this upcoming election. Are you? Or for any questions, or if anyone would like to question anything as to why I might feel the way I do regarding the that particular institution, feel free. I yield.
Thank you. I'd like to quote Michael here.
Where is he from? The gentleman that was just speaking, which state is he from?
Michigan.
So there's a lot of I hear from the United States, like the racial problems, right? We only had born in British Columbia. We never had the racial problem. There was the residential school systems of the natives that was brought to our attention more and more in the last few years, that the mass murder of the natives here and the residential school systems. BC, Alberta, Saskatchewan, and Manitoba, the western provinces, I cannot speak for the eastern provinces. I didn't go there when I was younger. We never had that racial issue. There was... It didn't matter what you were. I mean, it was totally, we never even heard of this kind of stuff until the last real, let's say last 15 years or 12 years. Well, 2010 was when the residential school systems came to the public knowing that they were exterminated in a gross, grotesque way. And that's where it's kicked off quite a bit of education in the last few years. But we've never had that. When I grew up, this racial tension, so it's a little hard for myself to understand that. Like you got to remember, we didn't get American news and TV and shows, et cetera, et cetera. We've noticed that now, watching the news, et cetera, CTV news and your fake CNN news and that kind of stuff. But we don't have that up here, so I don't know how it is. And so it's hard for us to understand that.
Dallas. Mm-hmm. Dallas. I believe Lewis asked a specific question about how to tweak the electoral process in manners that would empower us to cure all the problems that you're talking about here. I think you're kind of digressing off point from the issue that Lewis raised.
Oh, I know he mentioned something about the problem with the it's controlled the control system.
Yeah, that's the problem. He was going for a solution, talking about the electors. I believe he asked how the electors can the elector selection process can be tweaked, for lack of a better word, so that it's more produces a more organic and accountable form of government than the oppressive one that we're presently suffering under.
Okay,
However, I do appreciate Dallas making that statement, though, Charles. That's fine, because I get that, and I can appreciate when stating that, because, again, I think I've had this conversation before regarding ethnic relationships, and see if one can recognize that, you know, there are millions of black people that die every year because of racism simply in the industry of medicine. So just if we take everything off the board, I can look at every area and every aspect of life. For one of color, racism affects that here in this country. So yeah. I appreciate him saying I'm not aware of that. That's fine. But then, you know, we had some discussion a few weeks back. There were some continued emails, and then there were some people that kind of added to the discussion that may be on the level of Dallas, not aware. That for one, like myself, it is the number one issue. It is not the matter of economy. See, because racism affects every aspect of everyone of color's life in this country and has since their birth. So what he's saying is he doesn't get that. And there are others that have no idea with the amount of anxiety that certain people lived with simply traveling from point A to point B. And how that affects a police encounter can affect one's life, not even making it through the encounter. And there are many that have never been on this call. I don't know how many of you have just been stopped just because, not even in a car, but walking down the street. Now, I'm in my mid-50s now. That doesn't happen. But that didn't stop happening until I was around 30 years old, and I was dressed in a suit the majority of the time, simply because of the type of work that I was doing. So I was afforded a little level of respect simply because of my dialect and again, how my appearance. However, I've known, you know, I've had family members who've had their skulls cracked. So simply because of where they were, an ex-police chief of the city of Detroit actually did an op-ed and shared how what led him to become a police officer. You know, growing up, and he was attending one of the most prominent schools, high schools in the city, and the police rolled up because he's a rather large man and just decided that he wasn't in the right place at the right time and decided to beat him. And he was afraid to even share this experience with his parents. So this occurs, you know, all the time. There's a heightened level of sensitivity regarding certain matters, but because it even becomes a matter of health. So I don't want to harp on that. As Charles mentioned, my question was, regarding, you know, it's really who is a qualified elector? And for so many years, this country has excluded anyone for the first portion. One needed to be a white male and in some instances, a landowner. So what Nikki has mentioned earlier regarding a particular class making the rules for themselves, she's right. So we then now it has expanded, and we want to make sure in our forum that everyone is inclusive, all are inclusive, all have the same voice, male, female, regardless of ethnicity or any other factor which may divide the people and has been used to divide the people over the years. But yes. My question was, as our qualified electors, how might we influence this quickly approaching election, if that possibility exists? I yield for the response. And if not, that's okay, too, as long as we put something in place. We work towards our strategy. And growth is something that we're all, Mike, whether it's Mike in Florida, whether it's Dallas, we're all in agreement there with the consensus that we do need to grow our communities. There is a strength in numbers. I yield for any feedback.
Thank you, Lewis. Sincerely, you're raising profoundly important issues. I would like to elaborate on something. I think I may have mentioned it to you before, but maybe not. There's basically three ways of organizing qualified electors that I comprehend. It's basically a universal process, but there's three categories that are modernly applicable that I can comprehend anyway. Maybe somebody else can come up with another one, but traditionally it was only geographical. That's one of them. It's geographical. It's the local community, okay? I would dare add to that probably, well, they're both important, and one of them is ethnic, racial, like what you're talking about, and I'll get to that in a moment. The third is ideological or religious, okay, because that would be the Roman Catholics and the Jews, that they would have different communities. The Roman Catholics would have one community, the Jews would have another community, and maybe sometimes the Jews would be voting different than the Roman Catholics. That would be interesting, because then us Protestants would be deciding whether or not to side with the Jews or the Roman Catholics in that instance. Or, you know, there's the Buddhists and the Hindus and the Native Americans and all other kinds of ideologicals, and you could even throw in the Democrats and Republicans. It's all ideological, however you want to slice it. But so that's ideological and geographical, or should be well understood at this point, and the only remaining one that I'm comprehending is the one that Lewis is raising, is racial and ethnic. See, our local township communities can be organized. Traditionally, they've been organized geographically, but they can also be organized ideologically. A church deacon is the same as a town constable. Tithing man, they both relate to the word 10. Deacon is decimal system, which is 10-based. It's ideological. It can relate to religious jurisdictions like that. And similarly, because it's undeniable that there are racial undercurrents in our United States of America community, in Canada, all over the world pretty much now. We've got intermixed racial communities. Hardly any communities anymore are racially pure in any sense of the word. But inherently, like what Lewis is saying, when it comes time to have governmental authority over people, it is best if the people with governmental authority are of the same racial and ethnic category as those whom they are governing, so that when it comes time to arrest a black person, it's a black person doing it, not a white man. Okay? And conversely, when it's a white man that needs to be arrested, it should not be a black man. And same with Chinese and Native Americans, Latinos. The idea is to form responsibly self-governing communities. That is the bottom line. And if people have tendencies, they want to be with their own race, that is, generally speaking, I think, a healthy thing, so long as they are not doing anything prejudicial or antagonistic towards other racial communities. It's a healthy thing. I think the black community should be forming their own communities, their own townships and precincts, where whitey better not step in there. No, unless you got some black man inviting you in, preferably in writing, then you just stay out of here, white boy. I think that's a good way of doing it. reasonably.
Can I step in for a sec there?
You, Dallas?
Yeah, I'd like to step on that one. I think that's what creates racism, because we have black police officers, Oriental police officers. They're called Royal Canadian Mounted Police. They are all ethnics, and I think it's very, very, very important that all the police officers are our sheriffs, and we can't segregate societies. That's the problem. I mean, we have. I mean, as I said, I think the biggest problem right now is this: they're creating this racial war right now that you guys always had down there. That's what's happening up here. We see that coming, the segregation of different ideologies and different races, but we're all the same race. We're the human race. I think it's very important that we don't judge a man by his color or a woman by his color. We judge that person by their actions. I think it's one of the most important things. And I mean, even in our constitution, we have ex-RCMP officers that are in the police force that are taking over the part about our hiring and firing or bringing people in that were in law enforcement. We have many great police officers out there, and the RCMP that are involved with this, that are on the constitution, we are putting it out, and their recommendation is, if you are already in the law enforcement, as a sheriff or whatever, you're going to, the last 35 people that you arrested will be brought in and asked how you were treated by this officer. Division creates our second oldest has two black children. Their husband was black. We don't look at them any different because they're black. I have Native blood in me. My children are Native. To me, it's like we're all human beings, and this is why I've worked hard this year with the Native bands in British Columbia and also Osage Nations in Ontario, is that there is no Indian Act, there's no BNI Act. We all got to come together. We're all sovereign. We have to work together, and there's no racial, there's no differences. We are equal. Creator is all equal. We work to become equal. And I think we've got to really position our words that we have to come together. There's nothing between any color. And, you know, the red, the yellow, the white, and the black.
Gosh. The
fundamental foundation is we got to change that. And I understand you're trying to say so. That was just my input on that one there. Thank you.
Thank you. Duly noted. Lewis, obviously Dallas has got a different perspective on this than I do. I'd like to know if you're seeing any merit to my position, or if you're more inclined to believe, agree with Dallas there. Lewis, could you comment?
Yes, I will. And thank you for that. As Dallas, I've got a multicultural family, if you will. I believe in inclusivity of all. I, however, do believe that what you spoke of, Charles, will happen naturally in this country. And I'll tell you why. It's a woman named Jane Elliott, and some of you may be familiar with Jane. She performed an experiment back in 68 called the Blue-Eyed Experiment, where she separated her class. She was a teacher. She separated her class by blue and brown eyes. And then the blue-eyed she treated as she saw the black people in this country being treated. This was right after the assassination of Martin Luther King. And she then went on to do all this diversity training. And she saw that within 1 hour, the attitudes of children changed, that even carried over once they went outside to recess, where the brown eyes were the superior ones. And the blue-eyed were not. They were treated as she saw black. So she gives an example of prejudice versus racism. And in a hypothetical situation where, as your car breaks down, and you can hypothetically, you're at a road crossroads. You can either go right or left, and you can see, let's say, a half mile. You got to walk. You see a porch light on, and somehow you see this family, and you see a black family on one side, and you see a white family on the other, and the choice is made by your ethnicity, meaning that you feel that you, as a black man, I'm going to walk towards this black family because I need help. and I need them to open their door. And it's 8 o'clock at night, okay, or whatever the case might be. And I've got a choice, and I've got to walk a mile down the road to get help. Which way am I going? And that's simply a prejudice, a personal prejudice, not something that is legislated, whereas someone needs to live, you know, in a certain community, or there are, you know, people are refused federal home loans based upon ethnicity, those type of things. As long as there's equal access across the board, Charles, what you've mentioned, I actually believe occurs unless you're in a family which is multicultural, meaning that if one speaks Spanish, we have a section here in Southwest Detroit, whereas if you don't speak Spanish, please know someone that does or know someone in this particular area, because that's where the Latinos, that's their section. They have all the businesses. You know, we have another section within Detroit, which is all Arab American. There is a section outside of a suburb of Detroit called Dearborn. They separate themselves. You have the Christian Arabs, which you call the Chaldeans. They're in Dearborn. The Muslim Arabs, they're in a different side. So I think that that's kind of a naturally occurring phenomenon, if you will. But it should never be in legislation. And people should have equal protection. So when you say, well, you know, white boy, what are you doing here? I then hear a territorial issue. And I've had this discussion before regarding even one side of the city versus another side, or do you go over here in this neighborhood? And I was in insurance for a number of years. I talk about how crooked that industry is, but I would go anywhere in any part of the city at any point, corner to corner. And I think that anyone should have the ability to do that. My wife and I did that even regarding our social life. So we would go into other areas with other ethnic groups that mattered not, you know, or wherever, because we felt we had the freedom to go anywhere. So I believe we all have that freedom. So I'm in agreement with Dallas on that point. And Charles, I think that what you've mentioned, I think that kind of occurs naturally. It's when it's either not legislated or there are other black codes, if you will, in place that are not on the books. And we know in this country what that's looked like over the last 100 years, or even since the elective franchise was awarded, okay, to all the people of color. We know what that looks like, you know, those unwritten rules. Those are the things which I'm against. So I'm not against either of what you said. I agree with both of you. I agree that Dallas, in this country, though, one can't say that they're really colorblind, really. There's no such thing as that. And in fact, when people who might classify themselves, and I like to stay away from these terms of liberal or conservative, but I'm going to use one now, some well-being people that consider themselves liberal say, no, I don't see color. That's actually offensive if you're talking to a man of color. So you're telling me that you don't see me standing here in front of you. Okay, and that's take it to another level. So I yield.
It's a sad world that we have to have that division. But like I said, we're starting to see that now coming up here. We never had that before. I mean, there were some bad times in the 60s and 70s, but like I said, I mean, I went to school. I had friends that are black, Chinese, Korean, Ukrainian, Polish, German, Italians. Two of my best friends were from India. We didn't even know what it meant. So we're seeing it now. We see the diversion where they're breaking up our cities. They're putting East Indians here, they put Muslims here, et cetera, et cetera. This will be a total flaw to our system. It will actually cause racial tension, and I think that's what the Bilderberg Group wants. This is what they're doing in stealth, as far as I can see. We got to change that mentality. That's why, like I said, if you watch we don't even have protests up here, really. We have more like educational rallies where we talk about things. We're starting to notice with anti First Amendment. You guys call it the Antifa. They've infiltrated the last couple of years into Ontario. 2 years ago, they flew into Edmonton from Spokane, Seattle, and landed in
in Edmonton and caused a big ruckus here. They weren't even born here. It's mind-boggling. So this is what we're up against. So I think if we stick to believing that we're all equal, we're all sovereigns, and I hope that, you know, it gets better where you're at. I don't assume it's going to get better very quickly with what's happening around the world right now, but very important that we all realize that we're all men and women that want to raise our families in a good world with accountability and respect. And how do we get there? By teaching others that the system's broken, the system has to be fixed. Okay, thank you for your time. That was great.
And I will say this just lastly, and I will yield, Charles, for you to make any concluding statement on the first portion of the call. Because my parents both went to different colleges, University of Michigan, the other Michigan State, so I spent my educational years really between three cities, either Detroit, Ann Arbor, or East Lansing. And it was, I think I shared on a call in the past, if not this call and another call, Charles, I know that you were on, that I first realized what you just mentioned, Dallas, when I was in elementary school, the time of the Iraq-Iranian war, because my friends were Iraqian, Iranian, Korean. We had one white guy in that group. There's myself. We had one member of a number of nations, and they stopped talking to each other when that war broke out. And not only did they stop talking to each other, they would not acknowledge each other's presence. I was about 10. I was either 9 or 10 years old. And I was tapping one that was in front of me in line and say, hey, that's, you know, and I gave our name of our friend. And they both shook their head and they looked at me and one had to, you know, explain that their countries were at war and as such, they couldn't talk to each other anymore. We were 9 years old.
Wow.
So our parents were all at the University of Michigan. So because my mother was there at University of Michigan, we were in student housing, you know, everyone was there. All we were in student housing. So you had people from all over the world. So I grew up exactly like, you know, just as you mentioned, but in an urban center such as Detroit and the Chicagos and the New Yorks and the Baltimores and these type of areas. It's very much segregated. And you mentioned earlier, your sheriffs were no longer from where they were policing.
Yeah.
That stopped here as well under a couple of mayors ago. There was a residency requirement where those that, if you were policing Detroit, you lived in Detroit. Even though there were a lot that were skirting that rule, at least that was the rule. Okay, that was removed by Outstate Michigan. So now you've got a lot of people that don't look like Detroiters, just as Charles mentioned, coming in and policing a community that they're not from. They don't look like the people that they're policing. There are different sets of rules of engagement.
Yeah.
So that's some of what we're seeing going on, and that's why you're seeing some of these uprisings. And, you know, this is the second time around for Detroit, you know, as there was a very serious one in 67, 68 as well, that the last time that the National Guard came into Detroit. So there was a big there's a big discussion here a couple of months ago because you had some pastors actually asking for the National Guard to come in and help distribute food or medical supplies or PPE or whatever it was, and that was a big thing. As there was another entire population that said, no, do not ask for the National Guard to come in here. We will handle this. And the last time they were here, it didn't work out too well. Several people were killed. Not looking to do that again. I yield.
Thank you, Lewis. And thank you for your notation that we are at the two-hour time mark for the conclusion of our formal business meeting. I would like to go ahead and say there's a number of agenda items here that we haven't covered, but it's kind of just a starting point for discussion anyway, and I think we have had good, healthy discussion here, which is the main point. And I would like to say we are going to continue with open discussion here with even less constraints immediately following here. And this is 2020, October 3rd. And I'd like to declare the formal closure of, well, no, before I do that, is there any other suggestions for anything that should be put on the agenda for next Saturday evening conference here? Anybody have any agenda items they'd like to put on the conference for next Saturday? Hearing none. I'll formally close the business section of our meeting here. I do hope you can hang with us for a little while further, Lewis. I think this particular issue might have some more life in it if we can discuss that a little bit further. But, Lewis, are you going to hang with us for a little while, or do you got to run?
I'll be here until about 7:30, so just about 15 more minutes.
Okay, thank you. Here, I would like to revisit the issue with you, Lewis. Do you see advantage at all to having – I think the word segregation has got a bad reputation unjustifiably, largely because when segregation was tried in times past, the separated black communities and other Native American communities were ostracized from the economic system and driven into poverty. That is what caused the segregation in times past to be associated with evil and prejudice practices. I think if we have good economic policies in place where there's equal opportunity for commercial transactions to flow amongst all of the communities, then I think the natural ethnic bond between the differing racial communities will produce a stronger organic body politic for all of America and the whole earth. I can't help but think that black communities, that it would be really, really a big comfort to black people to know that if they're going to get arrested, it's got to be a black man or woman that's going to do it. It's not going to be no white boy. It's not going to be no Chinese. It's not going to be no Arab. It's going to be a black man or woman. To my mind, that would be a comforting thought to all communities that have suffered racism. Us white people haven't suffered racism a whole lot, not in this country anyway. But to my mind, that would be a positive development for ethnic groups that have suffered racism. Lewis especially, could I get your response to that proposition?
Oh, I would be in agreement with that. Am I...
Yeah, I hear you.
Can you hear me? Okay. No, I would be in agreement with that. And, you know, that's one of the issues. That's why I'm such a proponent of the self-governing communities. You know, I like those that are within that community. So, again, it's not even necessarily – it doesn't come down to an ethnic issue, although 98% of the time that's what it is. It's about being a member of the community, because it's not as if there have not been some white people in a black community since there's been a black community in this country. And I should say a black community has been allowed to exist, because if it wasn't allowed to exist, history has shown it's been burned down or bombed and that land taken. So in all the communities that there has always been some members of that ethnic group that would have been considered white there. When I go back, I can go back 8 generations in my family. They're there. Now, I mean, voluntarily, I'm not talking about via rape. So the DNA being in there because of rape, I'm talking about voluntarily, meaning married into the family. So it's about, to me, that proximity of community, and that community may include those of mixed ethnicities, you know, obviously the products of these marriages. So it's when you've got outsiders coming in, and typically those outsiders do not look like those within that particular community.
So whether I'm talking the example of the Latino community, the Black community, the Arab community, when you've got outsiders coming in, because there, I could go in and I could be, if I was one in law enforcement, in the Chaldean community, well, we see, I interact with Chaldeans, or did when I was out and about often. So in business owners, and would not have an issue. It took me a while to kind of learn the culture. It took me a while when I was servicing that community as a case manager for a husband and wife to come in, and the wife to sit on the floor and the husband to sit in the chair, because that was a little different from us culturally. We tend to offer our wife the chair, and as a husband, we will stand. She sat on the floor. When I asked her directly, would she like a chair, her husband answered for her. I had to learn that I needed to address him. I do not speak directly to this man's wife. And she came in and sat right on the floor, right next to him. Well, that was a little... My woman, Charles, you've met my mother or talked to my mother before. The women in my family are very assertive and borderline aggressive. That would never happen in my family. So I had to learn a few things, cultural differences. So it really becomes a member of the community. And I think that what you've discussed, what you're talking about, the ethnic groups gathering, we're tribal. We're tribal as people. That's kind of a human nature. That's why I said I think that phenomenon would develop, naturally until there is such intermingling of the ethnicities that they're no longer differences. As long as there are differences, whether it be language, or the amount of hue in one's skin, there will be, I believe, in our country, because of this history that exists from especially those that have attended public schools, a tend to gathering with those that look alike. Happened all the time. Again, because of my upbringing, because I spent time in equally in each one of those cities, two college towns that were very different college towns. East Lansing was completely different from Ann Arbor. And I had a lot of Canadian friends as well. I wrestled. So I traveled throughout Michigan, we were always amazed at how polite Canadians were. We really were. We always thought, my God, they're polite. Because here, that wasn't necessarily the case.
Canadians always say, I'm sorry.
Right. I'm sorry about that, or please, or thank you. And we just thought, my God, these are the most polite people. They come down and hang out. Sometimes we go over, and I just cross, again, I'm in Detroit, so I'd go over to Windsor all the time. The drinking age was like 19. So, again, in my younger years, I spent a lot of time there. So, again, I think that we're on the right path as long as we keep it with community building. I think when you get to – there are those that are attempting to build communities regarding ethnicities. I've participated on some of those calls. They're as restrictive as some of these other – when you try to bring a model for growth, such as what we're talking about, the townships and the precincts, and just present just that model, nothing else, not trying to change any of their ideas and objectives, it doesn't tend to be well received, in my experience, even within the group here that wants me to become – active with them and what they're doing. And their objective is to take over the funding of the municipality, City of Detroit, but based upon the people. And the people, and there's some people that have put some economic agreements in place with African nations have gone back and forth, travel, and again, in writing. And, of course, some of these nations are not favored nation status of the current de facto corporation. And, in fact, in some instances, have even threatened people against doing business with these nations. So, there's still hurdles being thrown by the de facto government to keep the status quo, which is there. Take a picture of the Senate. The House of Representatives,
looks more, is more, in my opinion, representative of the population of the country. Then take a snapshot of the Senate. I tell people all the time, you want to know who's running this corporation? At least the front men for the people behind the scenes, and you'll never get a picture of them. But at least these are the front men. Take a picture of the Senate. Snapshot. That's it. And the laws are still, so there's still hurdles being put in place when you've got those communities, you know, that have separated themselves and look to separate themselves via ethnicity based upon the common laws of the, or not common law, based upon the statutes in place. They're not using basically the common law. And that's when I've introduced it. I've talked with some of the leaders of this group and what they call council calls. Even joined the council to do so, but found absolutely no traction. So that's something that I'm, you know, always interested in. How do we, you know, engage in others to duplicate, you know, what we're doing and grow their own common law, constitutionally protected townships, at least here on the states.
If I may.
Yes, I yield.
If I may, Michael, in Florida, I know we're kind of relaxed here in the rules, but I just wanted to ask for the floor to speak about what is going on in the nation with all of these various groups. You know, we're all trying to build our own house. Beacon's got their house. Keith's got his house. Anna's got her house. We could go on and on and on with all these different groups wanting to build a house so they can occupy and be their shelter and their headquarters for their idea. But the government that rules over us, they want us to continue to be divided. They want us fighting amongst ourselves. They want us pointing the finger at the various groups, blaming guilt, accusing, and they don't want us becoming substantive. They don't want us accomplishing anything. They want us to remain in the public hamster wheel, ever spinning and exhausting time, energy, and money, but getting nowhere. And we have to unite on common threats, common crimes that are affecting us all. The various other pet projects that we all have need to become secondary. We're not going to attract an audience or numbers or critical mass with Civics English. It has never been a popular subject for the masses. But what will attract the masses are the criminal behaviors of the tyranny. And when we can identify those criminal behaviors that are common threats to all of us, then we'll get traction, then we'll find a crowd, then we'll get accomplishments achieved. But as long as we keep going in circles about all of the issues that we all have, and you know, we've been doing it for decades. I've been in this movement for 32 years plus. I've been on these calls and in similar conversations for many, many years. The pattern continues to repeat itself. We need to get directed towards substantive, solution-oriented conversations. I yield. Thank you.
If I may.
Thank you, Michael. Yes, Lewis, did you have something?
Dave in the thumb did.
No, yeah, this is Dave.
Dave.
Thank you, Michael. I agree with you, but I do want to address Lewis because we kind of come from the same area. Lewis, I'm a little bit older than you. I was born in 1959 in Detroit. Livernois and Finkel.
Okay.
We lived on Quincy, and you know, it was a dead end street, junkyard at the end of the street. It was a mixed neighborhood, black and white, mostly black and white. There was some Orientals. The kid at the corner's name was Masami. He was my brother, older brother's age. I kind of remember him. He had a big black dog, and our very next door neighbors were you know, a black couple, older, they were like grandparents to us, you know. And I didn't have any friends. I've never had any friends based on race, you know. I've never had any enemies based on race. Although I've, you know, experienced a lot of discrimination. You know, I had black friends in the neighborhood, although I moved in, you know, when I was in kindergarten, we moved to Warren. But, you know, growing up as a teenager and most of my adult life, I had long hair. And, you know, the cops used to single me out. I'd get pulled over for no reason. You know, I didn't always have the greatest cars, you know, new cars. I had some, you know, junkers, and I'd get pulled over. I had long hair, and I was driving a junker. You know, I didn't do nothing wrong, but they always wanted to look to see if I had any guns or drugs. And, you know, I used to, my parents were from Windsor. I used to go over the border all the time. You know, going over with my parents as a kid, you know, I don't remember ever I think we got pulled over a couple times when, you know, my grandmother from the old country, you know, was with us. And, I mean, she was usually with us. We were either taking her home or bringing her back. And she lived in Windsor. But when I started going over there by myself, you know, without the parents, when I could drive, I got pulled over almost every single time and, you know, strip searched several times. And, you know, I'll tell you, brother, I have, you know, I don't have a huge world of friends. I am legally blind, but I got some of my best friends are black. And one of my best friends in particular is a black guy. And he's an ex-Pontiac cop of all things. But, you know, he lives in Tennessee. And, you know, we're very like-minded. And, you know, I consider him a brother. And he considers me a brother. You know, we don't have any, I don't think we have any interracial marriages in my family. But, you know, as a white man, you know, growing up most of my life, man, I driving around, I wasn't doing nothing wrong. I didn't have nothing on me. The cop, you know, I'd seen them, that bubble in my rearview mirror, boy. And you talk about anxiety. Holy shit, man. You know, men, women, these bastards that call themselves, you know, law enforcement, you know, they used to be called peace officers, you know, back in the day. And I really think they had good hearts and they wanted to help their, you know, fellow man. But now all bets are off, brother. And I'm sure your forefathers, you know, I know they experienced a lot of bullshit in this country. But I'll tell you what, you know, America and Canada are probably some of the only nations that actually have this interracial thing going on, because, you know, you go to Italy, it's all Italians. You go to France, it's all French people. You go to even Africa, you know, it's all black folks of the tribes, you know, and I've never been there, you know, but, and I might be speaking out of school a little bit, but, I know you know what I'm talking about. So I don't have a problem with a black neighbor as long as he keeps up his property like I keep mine up, or as long as I keep mine up as like he keeps his up, right? And again, it's all about character. I don't care what color you are. I am legally blind, and I'm also colorblind. I have been colorblind my whole life.
I actually colorblind, yes.
But I do see some color. You know, I can tell the difference between a black man's skin and a white man's skin. And again, like Ricky White in our Colorado calls, you know, he's a white man, but he ain't white. I'm not white. You know, where does that term come from? You know, I know it's all about, many of us have said it on this call and many other calls, the most classic form of military strategy is divide and conquer. They breed racism into people. I've never had a racist, you know, hair on my body. I don't care what color anybody is, but I'll tell you what, you show me your character and I'll tell you if I like you or not. You know what I'm saying?
I do. And thank you for that. And I will respond just briefly. I don't paint anyone or any people with a broad stroke. The reason I mention that, even my background and upbringing through my educational years, was East Lansing and my Ann Arbor experience and my East Lansing experience were two completely different people. See, so I met that they were – so I would never say that white people are this or white people are that. Whereas the Ann Arbor experience was much more inclusive of all, okay, of all ethnic groups, even as elementary kids spending the night over one another's homes. East Lansing, which was much more segregated, and although the wealth gap was not significantly different. I believe at the time that I was in Ann Arbor in the mid-70s, it was probably at least one of the top 10 wealthiest places in the country. But East Lansing wasn't really far behind. And all of the legislators of the in the Michigan House, their kids didn't go to school in Lansing. They all went to East Lansing. So as such, I went to a high school where there are only 73 people that look like me, okay, out of the over 1,325. So when I say to Charles that phenomenon of gathering, ethnicities gathering together, there's a joke, you know, a comedian said, well, why are they all sitting at the same lunch table? That phenomenon happens, whereas you tend to gather at the same lunch table or the same section, the hangout section of a high school, or a particular area. That's where we would all congregate. Didn't matter. You would actually look for the next voice or the next man or woman that or child in that instance that looked like you. And then being in an area, Detroit, where I'm a native of, and I'm very familiar with every area that you just mentioned, Dave, and yeah, you are just a bit over. So you entered the scene 7 years prior to me. I came on board 66. I entered this realm during a time of turmoil, by the way. You know, in Detroit, where, you know, 80% of the population then now looks like me. So I grew up here and then went to the other areas. And there are differences. They are really differences. Then in East Lansing, you know, there's actually, or there were at that time, subdivisions named White Hills and Old White Hills. And Old White Hills was essentially old white money. And the newer White Hills was those that basically just came into money and had the newer homes that were built. It was a newer subdivision. But the Old White Hills, and that's literally was the name, White Hills, on the plaque, you know, entering it. So, racism was rampant, my experiences in East Lansing, where that was not the case. I was a part of an all-inclusive community as a part of student housing where no one's got some money. Everybody's parents are over there going to school, you know. And it was, I mean, literally, not just domestically, but internationally, it was a huge mix. We ate all types of food over everyone's house. You know, this immunity thing wasn't an issue. We were all together. It was 70, so it was not an issue to go over to someone else's house, you know, and spend the night there without having harm come to your child. So I grew up in that type of environment and then later experienced, this is different. And then later in visits to my family, which are from the South, Alabama, when I experienced that type of Southern racism, I was a teenager. I thought it was funny. I literally laughed in the woman's face. She got angrier. I had never seen something like that except on TV at that level of racism in a business. And then as wrestling, going up meeting a wrestler from the UP, he was able to show me his KKK card. I'd never seen that. I was 17. He'd never seen a black guy except on Good Times and television. So we had a talk, and that's where it is. It's communication. So that's why I guess my experiences are varied. I don't ever look to paint any
people with broad strokes and with a paintbrush, because I've experienced it and I know that that's not the case. So with that, I yield.
Thank you, Louis.
And one thing, other Dave, I've always had long hair too. If it wasn't wrestling season, so that's part of the reason I was always stopped as well. Our hair.
All right. Well, I appreciate that, and it's always good hearing you on the calls, and you got a lot of good stuff to say, and I appreciate everybody on the call. Thanks, guys. I yield.
As do I, Charles. You've got the floor.
Thank you. I do like to reaffirm. I think a lot of what we were discussing here is the nature of the problem.
I got to bolt out of here, you guys, but thank you very much for the day. It's been excellent. I would like you guys, if you got time, should have mentioned earlier, I did put in the chat there of the UnifyThePeople.Ontario. There's a constitution draft up for the Ontario people, what we're working on, what they're working in Ontario. BC's got theirs up too. Just read part 1 to 8. Not all the other, all the articles. The articles are how we're going to set up our governance after we remove the illegal system, right? But just to give you ideas of what we're working on. But other than that, well, thank you for the day. What's the next scheduled meeting? That's next Saturday?
Same time, next Saturday.
Okay, thanks,
Charles.
Hey,
if I may, Dallas.
Yeah.
I called Mike Phillip and emailed him since I got on the call, and he didn't answer, but I left him a message. Have you ever invited him to this call? I forwarded my email from Charles to him. You ever talked to him about this call?
I haven't had time right now. I've been on the road here just doing some of my surveillance through the province, but I can give him a call.
Yeah,
I wouldn't mind doing another show with him now with the latest developments, because most of our the biggest thing about the Canucks show is that it's most of our viewers are U.S., right?
Right.
Yeah. But we could do that and do a quick call and mention this and talk about the fact that there's groups in the United States right now, the Republic's building to reestablish their constitution. That would be a heck of a show, actually. We can get two or three of us on there, maybe have a good chat.
Well, I know that, he's done shows on Alberta seceding from, Canada and becoming the 51st state. So I think he would appreciate this call.
I know. I've talked to him about that. We don't want to, we want to become a sovereign nation.
Yeah.
And we'll clean up our own back door.
Well, we're all the states in America are all independent nation states, the backing of each other.
Right now you're not independent states. You're controlled by the Vatican.
Well, you know what I mean. We were designed that way. The whole world is controlled by the Vatican, unfortunately, and
yeah,
that's
so
why
we
all on these calls.
That's when what's his name there? Sean Harvey gets on there. Join the U.S. Trump's going to save us. And we're going, listen, we'll clean up our back door in Alberta. We'll clean up our back door in British Columbia. The Republic's going to clean up their back doors. And soon as we get a few sovereign states actually doing something let's say this here, accountability, prosperity, freedom, and we start putting in the Constitution where the sovereigns are the source of all power and the government will be working for them with administrators. Like I said, well, we're not going to have any politicians. The best man and woman will put their application in. They'll get hired. They'll sign an affirmation, not an oath, an affirmation. If they break the Constitution, they'll be held for treason, which will be a death penalty. Yep.
Dallas.
Amen.
Did you say you have to run here, Dallas?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm sorry you got to run. Sure enjoy talking with you. We need to shift gears away from what we're going to do to take the bad guys back and just general talking. We need specific nuts and bolts strategy and I believe generally a lot of what is on the table with this conference is talking more nuts and bolts, and I would like to point out that
my documents, the constructive notice of treason document and the building responsibly self-governing communities document. If you haven't read those, please, Dallas, read those. I think those would immensely